from the land of the free and the home of the Chiefs, with two-man coverage of the red and gold, this is the Locked On Chiefs Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
This is a special Red Friday episode of Locked On Chiefs. You guys are going to be very excited because we have Matt Derrick with us from ChiefsDigest.com. How are you, Matt?
I'm doing a lot better than 53-some-odd guys in the locker room are doing, but...
But by extension, you're right next to him, right?
Yeah, it's a little easier on me than it is on them. But man, it's been a rough few weeks.
Well, folks, we're brought to you today by Draft.com. Check them out. Check out PFF. Their Edge subscription is something you can get for free by leaving an iTunes review with your Twitter handle in it. So jump over there and do that. The Edge product's great. It gives you fantasy and stats and all kinds of stuff. It's a great partnership, and we look forward to that. So give that a shot. Make sure you're subscribed. Tell your friends to subscribe. Anything on Android will work as well as iTunes. So thanks for that. Matt, this season has got to be moving forward, right? And it's got to be culminating at this point, right?
Yeah, you know, and the crazy thing is that, you know, this is a group that doesn't panic. I mean, it really is experience. And Andy Reid as a head coach does a pretty good job of keeping guys together and everything. And I'll say it, I mean, there were times even last season that I thought that this locker room might be during the regular season, especially like after the loss to Tampa Bay and Tennessee. I thought that this team would be a little bit more frustrated than it was. But, you know, they just didn't get too low last year. And I think the same was true this year. I mean, even as kind of the losing piled up, I mean, obviously nobody's happy to win. I mean, that they're angry when that happens. But, you know, there hasn't been necessarily a lot of confusion or what I would say just, you know, really major disappointment. But I think that changed this week. I mean, that was a locker room on Sunday that was very quiet. And I think this is a group that is really perplexed at what's going on. I mean, they understand that they're making mistakes. They know that they're not doing things correctly. Some of them, you know, will speak a little bit more brutally honestly. I mean, Mitch Morse being one of those who will, you know, tell you, you know, exactly what, to a degree, what they think they're doing wrong and everything and taking responsibility. But I think by and large, you know, a lot of it is that they're really mystified. They don't understand what's going on or going wrong right now. And that's the first time I think that I've seen that over the last couple of seasons.
Well, you know, and in years past, especially last year, Tampa stands out in my mind where it just seemed to me, and I wasn't sure whether it was a, let the water roll off your back and don't get too low. If that's a coaching point, if that's just the natural demeanor of that squad. But I thought there wasn't enough urgency. And until this last week, I felt kind of the same way. Like, you know, nobody's serious enough. I'm not advocating panic, but concern. And then Mitch Morse had some things to say. And I like the fact that he's able to step outside and be that voice of reason for the fans are obviously going to be on one side of the argument, but some of these players are a little bit too far copacetic, kind of, you know, we're going to make it up in the next game or the next game.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I mean, I think that's part of the coaching, and I think it is part of this the attitude of this locker room is that there is a sense of calm most of the time, but not necessarily this, you know hair on fire urgency and everything. And I think that most of the time that puts them in pretty good stead. I mean, I don't think they were ever really concerned about during the Giants game, but I think they thought they were going to win that. I mean, until they lost it, I think that they thought they were going to pull it out. I think they kind of had the same attitude to a degree, you know, this week as well against Buffalo. I think that they never really panicked because I think that they felt like they were going to pull it out. And I think we did see, obviously, a little bit more sense of urgency there at the end and everything. But, you know, I think that by and large, this is usually a plus for this team, that it doesn't panic, that it does remain calm even when, you know, maybe the everything's burning down around them. But if there's ever a time for a sense of urgency and really playing with that kind of fire and everything like that, I mean, I think it's right now.
It has to be. And What the other thing that strikes me is that, particularly in Morse's case, because it's easy to point to whoever's starting at left guard, because we know that they're a fill-in. We know that that's a weak link in the chain, right? But when you have LDT missing Swiss and you have Mitch Morse clearly admitting missing calls, missing blocks, these are the guys that you expect to be grinding this out and helping the line as a unit improve. And I think that directly affects the quarterback that everybody's been talking about all week. But do you think that they, as offensive linemen, have the ability to build some of that urgency into the rest of the offensive roster?
Well, I think that's the magic question, and I'll be honest. I mean, I think that it's not necessarily a mentality thing. I think it's also a physical thing. I think that a lot of what we're seeing, you know, the offensive line. I mean, yes, this is an offensive line that's not the strongest offensive line in the world. It's not the biggest. It's not the meatiest. And a lot of what they build this line around, it's built on timing. It's built on their athleticism and being able to get on the edges and do things and get downfield. And they're not doing that right now, mostly because they're not winning at the line of scrimmage. And if that's because, you know, they've got three guys in the middle of that line right now that are hurt or playing out of position, backup roles, everything like that, that could be a big part of it. And I mean, and that's not anything that you can really fix with, you know, attitude or changing the timing and everything. I mean, it is what it is. So, I mean, if part of that, you know, timing being off is just having all those guys on the same page, if part of that timing being off is that these guys are still have lingering effects from their injury and they're not 100%, I don't think there's anything actually you can do about it. You just have to try and game plan around it. And at this point, I don't think they've figured that out yet.
It's definitely a strange problem to have. And it's not the only strange thing going on. I thought it was very interesting that on a week when you're soul searching and looking to make any adjustment you can to try and get some spark and get back in the right direction, that the one move that they make is a third tight end they decide to let go. And I'm sure no one's talking about it directly, but what's your take on the Charles for Ross Travis, you know, exchange basically?
Yeah, it's kind of you kind of think of it as a cosmetic change, but I'll tell you what, I don't really think that it is. I mean, I think it's a bigger lineup change than you think, because that's the one thing that this team has really lacked has been a strong blocking tight end. They've continued to go with three guys who are athletic and can catch the ball in theory, and really kind of, you know, just game planning around the fact that they don't have a blocking tight end by using like a sixth lineman at times and everything. The thing is there, you know, you really give your play away when you're doing that. And I've been busy the last couple of days, so I have not been a chance to do my all 22 film work yet and look at it and everything. I've got to go back to it because I'm fairly certain that there was at least one play that I saw when they brought in Cam Irving as a sixth lineman, that they moved Eric Fisher over to the right side next to Mitchell Schwartz. And I saw that. I was like, well, okay. I think we all know which direction this play is going to go.
Right.
And, you know, and I think that, you know, the addition of Charles does give them a little more flexibility because he can catch the ball. He can do some things. So I don't think you're being quite as obvious now when you're bringing in a third tight end that's what you're going to do. You can move him around a little bit. So I think it gives you some flexibility there. And he's got a lot more blocking experience. I mean, we're talking to him today. He spent his second year in Cincinnati really playing the fullback role in that offense, playing fullback all season. So, and he did that for the Chiefs here. He did in training camp. He played fullback. I mean, he's got a lot of blocking experience. So I think that's a big move. I mean, and that's clearly what they're trying to do is they're trying to get in, you know, another body in there that can help them in the blocking aspects of it, because they need that, because right now they aren't creating any holes whatsoever, whether it's for Kareem Hunt in the run game or even in the, you know, the short passing game, being able to get some guys out there. You know, they've had some success with Derek Robinson throwing some blocks here and there, but they really need somebody else who can move on the outside and kind of help set that edge a little bit.
Well, and Chris will make fun of me because I like Charles coming out of college, which isn't really surprising to anybody who listened to this show before. But I like his tweener skill set. He's athletic enough. I think that's why they tried him at fullback. Do you think that he brings anything in terms of like an H role or something new that Reed can try to work into the offense as a new wrinkle?
You know, I really think he does. I mean, and you're right. I mean, the size he's a little bit different. I mean, he's not that 6'5", 6'6" type of tight end and everything. He's not like a Travis Kelce. You know, he patterns his game after, you know, some other tight ends who are a little bit smaller. I mean, he kind of looks up to the, you know, Delanie Walker kind of types and everything like that. That's what he kind of wants to be. And so, yeah, I mean, I do think that you can use him in a lot of different roles. When he comes in, he doesn't have to necessarily just be a straight tight end. He is not going to be somebody you have to split out anything. I mean, you can line him up attached to the line of scrimmage. You can line him up in the backfield. You can do a lot of different things with him.
I see wing formations in his future, but on the other side of the ball, when guys aren't happy with what the other unit is doing. I noticed in particular that Marcus Peters left the locker room after the debacle against the Bills before anybody could talk to him. And I noticed Kelce did the same thing. And it's, I think it's interesting that it's a guy on each side of the ball, but is that an indication of the player's frustration level with the quarterback situation?
I think it's probably a little bit too much to read into that. If anything, I think that that might be whether it's maturity on their part or maybe listening to some advice from their teammates. Those are the two guys who are the most vocal, and especially in Kelce's case, to probably say something that they would regret 24 hours later. So there are plenty of times when, you know, we've seen, you know, teammates and everything like that, you know, trying to counsel Travis Kelce on, you know, maybe not talking after games because they know that he gets fired up and says things that maybe he doesn't necessarily mean or things that he's going to regret later. So that's why I that probably had more to do with it than anything else. I mean, it was really just, you know, a decision for them not to want to talk and say something that was going to cause problems. Is that the most of their frustration? It's hard to tell. I mean, without them actually telling us, you know, what their level of frustration is, it could be a frustration at themselves. It could be frustration at the quarterback. It could be frustration in the coaches. It could be their teammates. I mean, because right now, I think looking at it, there's plenty of frustration that you can point at everybody. I mean, I don't think that there's a whole lot of guys on this team you can point to and say, yep, that guy's doing his job 100%. No problems at all.
Right. But and the thing that stands out to me is the defense has been picking up speed the last few games. Obviously, the play of Reggie Ragland, and we won't go into him because I know I've covered that before with you. But locking down the run game a little bit more, where you're competitive against the run, bringing a little balance to the defense. And now, do they get a lift out of Revis? Do you get the feeling that they're looking forward to seeing him on the field in kind of a, oh, he's the legend? Or is it more of they just need another leader on that side of the ball, especially in the secondary?
Well, I think absolutely they do. I mean, you know, and it was very encouraging, I think, what they did against Buffalo in the passing game, especially having Terrence Mitchell come back. I think that they, to a degree, with, you know, with Ragland and what they're doing right now defensively, I think they have finally found the whole chemistry angle that they've been looking for since training camp. You know, they've really flipped the switch. And hey, and I'm going to give you a ton of credit for this because you saw this coming when it comes to working Reggie Ragland in, because, you know, really since the Dallas game, they've really have taken over this big nickel that you talk about and everything with, you know, using him in there and really getting away from a lot of these, you know, six and seven defensive backs lineups that they were using. And a lot of this, like I said, this goes back to training camp when they were rotating in inside linebackers, trying to figure out the right mix there. They've tried, and with Eric Berry going out, that just added to the whole disaster of mm-hmm. trying to figure out how they're going to play, you know, in the defensive backfield, how they're going to use these guys. And, you know, and I think it's taken them almost the entire season at this point to figure it out. But I think that with, you know, just with, I think with Ragland getting healthy and comfortable, him getting into that role, they got Kevin Pierre-Lewis, who has really stepped up. You know, I mean, that's helped stabilize that linebacking group that I think now has allowed them to, at the same time, stabilize that secondary a little bit more. And I think Mitchell, like I said, Mitchell really did, I think, really, really well. If they're able to add Darrell Revis into this mix and just give them that much more depth, I mean, this could be a really big step for the secondary. And I think we need to see it against a team like the Jets that, you know, offensively is playing pretty well, especially moving the ball through the air, because the last couple of games, I don't think they've really been challenged. I mean, they've gone up against, you know, a couple of teams really struggling in the passing game. So I don't know how much we really know about the secondary yet and where it's at, but I think this is going to be a really good test, especially if we get to see Revis this week.
Well, I'm thinking so too, especially with Eric Murray not practicing early in the week. Hopefully he gets back for that. But they've got a skinny wide receiver that's getting a whole lot of broken plays. He's got a couple of 70-plus yard touchdowns in the last few weeks, and I think he is going to stretch them and put some pressure on not just the corners, but how Sutton's going to scheme that rotation of what he does with his safeties.
Yeah, and mentioning Eric Murray's injury, I mean, they're talking about it being a high ankle sprain, which that tells me that he's probably not going to play this week. And that seems like the kind of thing that certainly is going to, you know, make questionable how available he's going to be over the next few weeks, even if he does play, you know, just what extent he's going to be available and everything. And I think that that's where I think maybe it is interesting that, you know, Derek Rivas is coming back right now. Because if Mitchell's playing well, you know, Rivas can play almost anywhere in that secondary. So it does make you wonder if they might end up using him more maybe as a cover safety than allowing Sorensen maybe to go into a different role. I mean, I think at this point, at least the way that the defense is playing right now, they're able to weather an injury like Murray's a little bit more than maybe they were 4 to 6 weeks ago. So at least you have that going for him. But, you know, Murray's been a pretty important part of the defense for a while now. But like I said, his playing time's definitely gone down since they've been going to, you know, using Ragland more. I think he's been playing maybe 20 to 30% of the defensive snaps. So it's not a huge piece to replace, but, you know, they don't have a lot of depth there. I mean, you know, Stephen Terrell is their next guy up there at safety, which is the only thing that makes you think that, you know, maybe that, you know, if in some coverage situations that maybe they do use Rivas in that situation.
Yeah, I'd be very interested to see that. I don't know how much we can expect to get out of Terrell, but maybe it's like you said, it's a numbers game. With Mitchell back stronger than he has been in quite a long time after a couple of weeks to see things from a different angle, I think that's important. And maybe they can move Rivas around. But do you get the sense that the lack of Eric Berry can be partially fulfilled by such an elite veteran, even if he's past his prime, in Rivas?
I think that's really interesting because, you know, to a degree, you know, leadership and everything, it does have to do a lot with, you know, having been there with the group and everything. So I think it is difficult to expect a guy to come in midseason and to be that kind of, you know, player and everything like that, that could, you know, and I certainly don't think anybody could step in midseason and replace Eric Berry. But you're talking about another voice. I mean, you're definitely talking about some experience and leadership, and especially in that secondary group that doesn't have a lot of it. I mean, it's a lot of young guys that are still back there. So, yeah, I mean, I think that alone, I think, is almost worth the investment in Rivas. If, you know, if he can be, even just an average defensive back, but you're able to, you know, add his experience, things that he's seen, things that he can bring back to the huddle to tell guys what's going on, what he's seeing and everything. I think that's something that they right now they don't have on that defense, and I think that's invaluable.
Well, and everyone is concerned, obviously, with the offense, as they should be. But, you know, it's a team game, and I keep coming back to the fact that it is, even though they've allowed fewer points in this last streak than they have earlier in the season, they still can improve their game too. And if they can allow less, it gives the offense a little more breathing room. And I'm just very interested to see how it all comes together. And that leads me into the big question. A lot of theories going out there about what should happen and what will happen. But from what you've seen and the players and the coaches that you've spoken to, obviously it sounds like Reed's going to give Alex Smith an extended amount of slack. But do you see a scenario where if poor play and another losing effort by either halftime or the conclusion of this next contest, is that enough spark to make a change, or are we really expecting not to see Pat Mahomes this season?
Well, I'm never going to say never. I try not to be an absolutist, and to a degree, I probably have been a little bit on Mahomes and saying that, you know, we're never going to see him barring an injury. I think I would have said, like I said, the chances of us seeing Mahomes barring an injury going into the Buffalo game, I would have put it like 0.1%. It's not that now. It's higher than that now. How high, I really still can't put a finger on. But from the coaching staff standpoint, they're 100% behind Alex and absolutely starts with Andy Reid. From that standpoint, I find it hard to believe that Andy Reid's ever going to get to a point this season where he would make a change. It's just hard to believe. I mean, could Alex Smith lose three games in a row and they all look bad and they decide to make the move? Possible. I mean, like I said, it's not out of the realm of possibility. I just have a hard time picturing the scenario where that happens. And And I'm not sure that the players are any closer to that either. I mean, it's, you know, they're all very defensive to a degree about Alex. You know, nobody wants to point fingers. Nobody wants to blame him. And you get guys like Mitch Morse, who I think almost feel guilty about the fact that, you know, that, you know, if there's something about their game that's reflecting on Smith. And, you know, and looking at the numbers, I mean, you know, yeah, I mean, Alex Smith is way down from where he was at earlier this season. I mean, those were MVP type levels. But, you know, number wise, over the last, if you just look at the last six games that they've lost, he's been okay. I mean, not necessarily terrific, maybe average, but, you know, the numbers are not horrible, which certainly leads credence to the whole Andy Reid saying that this is not all Alex's fault thing. But, you know, the other part of this to remember is that I do think that there are other aspects to this. And, you know, and part of that is that this could be Alex's, obviously, last season in Kansas City. And I do not think that anyone in this organization wants Alex Smith's last game as a Chief to be, you know, Patrick Mahomes coming on in the middle of the third quarter and that's the end of his career in Kansas City. Or, you know, having what, you know, to a degree has happened with Eli Manning this week in New York and getting benched and everything. I don't think that they want that to happen to Alex at all. I mean, because they like him. They, you know, they've all been a part of this together. So I don't think that they want, if this is indeed, you know, his last rodeo in Kansas City, I don't think that they want him to go out that way. I think they want him to go out on his terms. And that, to a degree, may be either going down with the ship or whatever happens. So, like I said, I still find it hard to believe that Andy Reid's ever going to get there where he replaces Smith, just given the circumstances. But like I said, I can't say it's a non-zero possibility because obviously something could happen. I just right now, I can't paint the scenario where it does happen.
Well, before I ask you what you think is going to happen, a little theory. If it's you making the changes, if you have the ability to go in there, and from what everything you've seen from the players and the coaches themselves in terms of communication and everything else, what are you looking to do to maybe get this offense sparked or get them going in the right direction? If you were making the changes, where would you start?
Well, that's a good question. And they have more information than I have, obviously, so they know where things are. And there's things that we haven't been quite told and everything because, first of all, I would want to find out where Parker Anger is and where he is health-wise because I still think that's their best solution at left guard. If it's just a matter that he's not 100% healthy, okay, then let's just move on. I mean, that's okay. I mean, but let's just know that that's our situation and he's not going to play this year and move on. But I think it, to a degree at this point, you know, even a maybe less than 100% Parker Anger is worth trying there right now. You know, I think that some of the problems I think that they're having offensively, there's not a whole lot that they can do about it. You know, with the injuries that they have, you know, taken and everything like this, I mean, you know, DeMarcus Robinson has got a catch percentage of about 52%. I mean, they're just not as strong in some positions and everything like that they were earlier in this season. And, you know, I think when you're running at an offense out there that, you know that if Kareem Hunt's on the field 50% of the time, he's getting the ball. You know, you've got, you know, Hunt, you've got Hill, you got Kelsey. I mean, when, you know, there's just, at this point, you know, at one time you felt pretty comfortable that there's five guys on the field. They could go to any of those guys at any particular time. Now you're getting into a situation where, you know, looking at the formations and everything, I think everybody's figuring out where the ball is going to go. And I don't know if you can really avoid that with just where they are right now, injury wise and roster wise and everything. I think they're fairly limited as far as the, you know, lineup changes alone that can fix this. You know, Andy Reid's been doing this a long time. And, you know, right now what he's preaching is we've all got to stick together. I believe in you guys. You got to believe in each other. It's a, you know, three musketeers and, you know, all for one kind of thing going on right now. And I think that's what he's counting on, at least. He's counting on the fact that these guys have pride, that these guys do believe in themselves, and that mindset alone is going to be what fixes it. And I think that's the best bet to a degree because I don't, you know, it's, this is not going to be something that's fixed with muscle. It's not going to be fixed, I think, with a lineup change. I think the only thing that's going to fix it is a mental change. And these guys just have to go back to remembering who they are, believing in themselves, having, you know, faith that if they do their jobs correctly, that things are going to work out. Because, you know, a lot of what the Chiefs do, it's based on timing. It's based on just doing your job. And if you do that, everybody starts doing that again, this thing can turn around pretty quickly.
Well, I think that's what most of Chiefs Kingdom expects, despite all the hubbub about the quarterback. So when you sit down, what do you think is going to happen? Do you have a projection?
For the game this week?
Uh-huh.
I have no idea. I really don't. I've been going into every game this week, the last few weeks and everything like that, going into the idea that they're going to pull out of this. You know, especially the last two games. These seemed like prime examples of that they're going to pull out of it. And I think they are. I mean, at some point they're not, I don't think they're going to go winless the rest of the season. I think this is still set up for them to win a bunch of games at the end of the year. And this is kind of one of those things where if they win this game this week, they could very well end up running the table or pretty close to it the rest of the year. They just need to get the one win to kind of get them going. But right now, I think it's going to go one of two ways. I think it's either a Chiefs blowout or it's a one possession game down to the very end. I don't think the Jets are going to blow them out. I feel like this is the game that they're going to win. I think they can put it together, but I have no faith in that prediction. I really don't know. I mean, this team right now is baffling because this is going to be the third game in a row where I think they should go out and win the game pretty comfortably. And this is the first time where I'm pretty unsure. I mean, I thought, gosh, there's just no way that Buffalo is going to come in here and play them close. They've got to be able to put this away. And this game, my gut tells me they're going to win this game pretty comfortably. My head tells me it's a last minute game and field goal either way.
I got to tell you, I know how you feel because I've been going back and forth all week. I've got it 21-20, and I don't know who – every day I switch. Who's going to end up on
top? I think it's a good. That might be a few too many points, but I'm right there. I just have no idea who wins.
I'm being optimistic. Maybe there's seven defensive touchdowns. I have no idea. But
I'm thinking 16-13, but have no idea who wins the game.
Robbie Anderson scares me. I think they are going to get some deep balls. I would not be surprised if there's a coverage that gets behind them. But I'm going to try to buck the trend for the rest of the Chiefs fan base and say that the Chiefs lose this one 21-20. Maybe that will turn around and bite.
It's worth a try.
Right? Hey, anything. Thanks for being with us again, man. It's great talking to you.
Absolutely. Always great talking to you too, Ryan.
All right, folks. Thanks for listening to us today. We'll have the post-game reaction show up for you Sunday night. We'll talk to you then.
Thanks for listening to the Locked On Chiefs podcast. While you're out there, give us a rating or review. And reach out to us on Twitter @RyanTreseyNFL and @ChrisClarkNFL. We'll talk to you next time.